The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today I think you'll find this a very fascinating session because we're going to visit with the supermarket guru. He's Phil Lempert. He's a guy who keeps his finger on the pulse of the retail food market, knows everything about food, and not just in the supermarket, but also in general. He and I go way back because we both were hosts simultaneously on radio station WOR out of New York City. He is all over the media. He's heard on radio, TV. He's frequently invited to talk about trends in the grocery and food business. And he has a wonderful, wonderful website, supermarketguru.com, and a great newsletter that you can subscribe to. We'll tell you how in just a few moments. Phil, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you, Ron. I'm looking forward to it because, you know, this coming year is probably going to be the most exciting year that we've seen in the food industry in decades.
Wow, that's very exciting. But before we do that, let's clear something up because I believe that you are broadcasting or we're podcasting together. I'm here on the East Coast. I think the temperature is about 22 degrees here in New York. There's a wind chill factor that takes it down into the single digits. And you're in my hometown of Santa Monica. Now, you're an old-time New Yorker, or originally from the East Coast, correct?
Exactly.
And we sort of switched. We switched coasts. So here I am, freezing, and you're in balmy Southern California. What's the temperature out there now?
Well, I'll tell you, Ron, it's a bit chilly today. It's about 64.
I'm so sorry. You might have to put a little sweater on when you go outside.
Exactly.
I feel your
pain. I'm not used to this.
I feel your pain. You know what's happened to you? That Eastern blood of yours has just gotten so thin by spending time out on the beach in Santa Monica.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, without further ado, let's get into the subject for today. Actually, I pinged you with an article from the Washington Post from, I guess it was yesterday, the Sunday Post, kind of a provocative headline here. No food is healthy, not even kale. Did you see the article? What do you make of it?
I did. You know, it's a very tongue-in-cheek, good article that makes people think and makes people wonder. I'm not sure it gave a lot of solutions to it, but the premise of the article is simple, that the closer we are to nature when it comes to our food supply, the more nutritious it's going to be. That if we take a breakfast cereal, for example, and I don't care what brand it is, basically we see the word enriched all over it with vitamins and minerals. Well, the reason that breakfast cereal is being enriched is it's actually had all the nutrients stripped out of it before it went into the box.
Right.
So, you know, whether it's kale, for example, and you know, kale, the funny joke about kale in the food industry is this was the produce item for many years, probably 50 or 60 years, that was actually used in the deli cases of supermarkets because it would withstand anything.
I remember
and
that.
Nobody would eat it.
Yeah, it's just a garnish. You know? It was a garnish.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And now kale, you know, I am not a fan of kale, and especially with all the new products that are coming out with kale. However, baby kale is actually very edible and very tasty. But the kale that we know and some of us love is something that is very hard to digest. But we're actually seeing kale being used as ingredients, and we get about 200 new products sent to us every week to evaluate. We only pick five. But you know, kale is showing up in just about every recipe
right.
for everything
right.
because it has this halo. You know, the halo used to be new. It used to be improved. It used to be fat-free, whatever it is. And now the two words of probably the past 5 years is kale and sriracha. You put those two words on any product and people are going to buy it.
Well, kale I'm familiar with. And, you know, there's kale chips. There's kale smoothies. You name it. And, you know, I agree with you that kale requires a lot of mastication to get it, to put it mildly. But now there's kale. It's interesting that they've taken young kale, put it in packages, and market it as a salad. And that is a little more palatable. And, yeah, it's nutrient-rich, right?
It is, but again, it depends with every food what kind of dressing you use. I mean, there's a documentary out of the BBC that it's a 6-part: The Men Who Made Us Fat and The Men Who Made Us Thin, 3 parts for each. And the reporter from England has done some segments here in the U.S., some there. But the funniest thing is he's outside on a park bench, and he has a turkey wrap, and then he has a Big Mac from McDonald's, a Big Mac with fries. And he points out that most people will go to that turkey wrap thinking that it's healthier than the Big Mac, when in fact the turkey wrap had double the amount of calories, double the amount of fat, and I'm not exactly sure about the sodium aspect of it. So we have a responsibility as a human being who eats food to read those labels carefully and to do some math. If you pick up a salad dressing that you're going to put on a kale salad and you turn it around, you know, the nutritional information is based on 1 teaspoon, some cases 1 tablespoon. Nobody uses 1 tablespoon of salad dressing on any kind of salad, especially kale, because you need something to soften it up. So you've got to then multiply. How many tablespoons are you using
to camouflage the taste of the kale, right?
Exactly. And you'll find that you might be consuming 300, 400, 500 calories and 20 or 30 grams of fat in that salad dressing, but you're eating a kale salad, so you think it's healthy.
It's virtuous, right? Well, do you think that the food industry is sort of a tale of two cities? Or are consumers as a whole becoming more quality conscious, or is it just the elite who are seeking out expensive, trendy foods?
Well, I think it was the elite in the beginning. Then with the millennial generation, we started to see those folks, and those people are 35 and under, really take a real interest in food. They graduated college, didn't get jobs, living at home, have no money. But what they could do is they could embrace food as a community, and they could have food raves, and they could, you know, go on Instagram and get recipes. So the millennials are really the ones who have led this whole movement of transparency, of sustainability. And survey after survey is showing us that they're really forcing the companies to make major changes. If you look at Chipotle, obviously forget about their food safety issues, but they really focused on local. They focused on getting rid of products that had GMOs. If you look at Panera Bread on their website, what they have is they have a list of 150, they call it their 150 no-no ingredients that they refuse to use. Even if we look at Kraft macaroni and cheese, getting rid of artificial color, I mean, that's sacrilegious for a food company to do.
Right. It got a real cereals. Got a real upgrade recently. That was surprising.
Yep, and all the breakfast cereal companies getting rid of artificial colors, artificial flavors. So that's why, as I said before, we're seeing the food industry going through some changes like never before. And it's good news, and we're going to see it continue. The one caveat that I've got to all this is we have to remember that, number one, the reason that we moved into these artificial everything was for flavor and color. So our products are not going to look the same, and also cost. So we will see the price of food increase as we're removing a lot of these preservatives and artificial flavors.
It'll decrease the shelf life, thus increasing the expense to the markets. Their inventories will have to be tighter. And there'll be some wastage because, frankly, stuff won't be able to stay on the shelf for 2 years.
Exactly correct. And by the way, I'm not sure that any food should be able to be on a shelf for 2 years.
Right.
Not that I want to eat anyway.
Indeed. So we're also seeing, you know, from the standpoint of sugar, sugar is really being demonized these days, and I think rightly so. So we're seeing a shift from the, you know, the hardcore soft drinks. I think soft drink sales are down, but the industry is diversifying. They're making, you know, energy drinks, and they're making vitamin waters and things like that. What's your take on that phenomenon?
Well, you're 1,000% correct. We've seen a huge amount of impact on the sugar industry, whether it's sweets or snacks or certainly sodas. It's been reported that soda is the number one source for added sugars. If you look at the new dietary guidelines that just came out a couple weeks ago, this was a call out. A major call out, and I was shocked because the two things that we really expected in the dietary guidelines was one about the sustainability of meat and a recommendation to consume less red meat. Now, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, other lobbying groups got that out of the guidelines, so that's not a part, although there is a section that talks about, you know, having other protein besides animal protein. But more importantly, the sugar lobby, very powerful, very well-funded lobby, was not able to get that out. And the recommendation is only 10% or less of added sugars a day. So it's forcing the soda companies to make changes. They've seen their sales decline. Also, at the same time, if you recall, and I'm sure you've discussed this, about 6 months ago, we started to see the reports about artificial sweeteners.
You're anticipating my next question, which is there's a knock now on artificial sweeteners, and maybe that's putting a dent in the sales of those products.
Absolutely. Now, what Coke did, now probably about 5 years ago, is they spent close to $5 billion to buy Glaxo, the company that makes vitamin water. But you know, what people, again, have to do is read those labels, because while vitamin water did take off, as did Smart Water, what happened is people started reading those labels and found out that all the vitamins that were in vitamin water were water-soluble and basically flushed out of your system. So you really weren't getting any nutrients from it.
And there's sort of paltry amounts of those vitamins, and you could easily get 50 times as much by taking a potent multiple.
Correct. And why pay all that extra? Because it wasn't hip anymore. Even if you have Jennifer Aniston being the spokesperson for Smart Water, at some point in time, you're going to say, you know, this water isn't really making me smarter, nor is the source, a smarter source. So what we are seeing is we're seeing many more people actually buying these water bottles where you can put fruit or vegetable in the bottom or in the top, and then it serves as a grinder similar to a pepper mill, and it actually adds the vitamins and the minerals from real fruit and real vegetables into your water. So we're seeing a lot of people doing that to save money and really to get some good nutrients and some great flavor.
Yeah, that's a hot new trend. I haven't seen that emerge yet here on the East Coast. Probably if I delve deeper at Whole Foods, I might be able to find those. That's an interesting development. So there's also a big controversy about GMO labeling. And I was really surprised because I think it was Campbell's that announced that they were going to go GMO-free, or they're going to do GMO labeling. They're going to specifically label their products. And several companies are saying, hey, we want full disclosure, even though some of the big supermarket organizations don't want that labeling.
Well, the GM labeling has already spent the anti-labeling bill. Most of the industries have already spent about $200 million to try to fight the labels. What's interesting is there are other countries around the world, Brazil in particular, that added GMO labeling to their product, and it didn't affect sales whatsoever, either positive or negative.
So much for that argument, right?
Yeah, so the industry complaining that, this is going to cost put so much more cost into the system isn't valid whatsoever, number one. Number two is we do have the right as consumers to make choices. And if, in fact, and the science does not prove that genetically modified organisms are good or bad for us. I've looked at many, many studies over the years, and it's not conclusive. That doesn't mean that I don't have the right to know whether or not a product has GMOs in it and be able to make a choice. Now, there's two things that you can do. Number one, if you buy something that's USDA certified organic, by law, it cannot have any genetically modified organism in it. Or there's now a new seal on it, says the non-GMO project. And again, highly certified, they're inspecting, they really ask for all kinds of data, and a company, in order to use this seal, has to be bulletproof on it. So that's how you can avoid GMOs right now. What Campbell's has done is very interesting. If you look at the Campbell's soup cans that are coming out, they'll have a little box under the ingredients that says some ingredients in this, and I probably get the wording wrong, contains genetically modified organisms. If you want more, go to their website. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is when you go to their website, it will not tell you which ingredients are GMO. Mm. It will just, again, have that disclaimer that some of our ingredients do have GMOs. Probably the most important thing that this announcement does for Campbell's is it says we're going to be transparent. We want to be a company that does right. And also, part two of their notification of this was that they will not support any industry group or any initiative that is fighting GMO labeling. Whoa. The industry is all abuzz about this, because when you have Campbell saying, okay, I'm not going to put money towards this, I don't believe in it, you guys are on your own.
Yeah.
It really has sent, you know, a cannonball in the heart of these anti-GMO labeling initiatives.
So they're breaking ranks, and we may see further defections. But to some extent, it's more sort of image burnishing, because it's not as if Campbell's will introduce a GMO-free line, or do they contemplate doing so?
Well, I think that they will. If you look at Bolthouse Farms, one of their recent acquisitions, I think you're going to see Campbell's developing non-GMO product lines down the road.
So they're a constellation of brands, actually. That's how that works.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So you're not going to see, you know, instantly getting GMOs out of ingredients. Number one, again, because the science doesn't dictate that it should. Number two, it's very difficult to create products like theirs without GMOs.
So many ingredients.
Corn, corn, soy, and what people forget about is, for example, when it comes to beef, most cattle are fed corn.
Right.
Most corn is GMO. Mm-hmm. So again, even if a product like a cow is not fed GMOs directly, they're getting it through the corn. So that's why it's a very cumbersome law. That's why it's a very cumbersome situation. And I applaud Campbell's for making a brilliant PR move. And again, most importantly, I would like to see a lot more disclosure about the particular ingredients. Breaking ranks from the industry is huge, and is going to start, to your point, a lot more companies doing the same thing.
Well, speaking of organic labeling, there's a lot of issues around organic labeling. So I recently read that there's going to be, and I'm not sure if I have the correct interpretation here, but the grass-fed beef and pork industry, the government is no longer going to support that designation. Do I have it correct?
Well, yes and no. Here's the good news about grass-fed, and I am a huge proponent of grass-fed. The meat is leaner, considerably leaner. It is more nutritious, and frankly, you're able to avoid, again, feeding cows or hogs either soy or corn, so that they are, in effect, quote-unquote, GMO-free. They're talking about changing the labeling, but if you take a look, and right now probably the best grass-fed beef comes from New Zealand. Their laws are much stricter than ours, and I think we are going to continue to see a huge movement towards more grass-fed beef, which again makes the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and other U.S. groups very upset, because they've been built on just getting people to eat more and more beef, getting people to, you know, not even think twice about any protein that's not an animal protein. And we've moved in a direction away from animal protein because of, number one, the price of it. Number two, the sustainability aspect. We can't continue to have these kinds of livestock feeds on this planet. It's just depleting us of water and air and everything else. So we're seeing a heavy move towards plant proteins, number one, but also, and yes, this is the ick factor, insect proteins, where we're now seeing a lot more cricket flour, for example, being used in protein bars.
I've had crickets at a Mexican restaurant, and they were kind of like toasty and crunchy. They were actually pretty good. And especially after a tequila or two, they're fine.
Exactly. Except the ones that are looking at you. Those
exactly.
are the ones that sort
no,
of
you don't want
out.
Those. Yeah. So, yeah, well, okay, that's a trend, but that may be a trend that some people may not want to pursue. So you're saying that the grass-fed standard is not being eroded by a government action to withdraw from the adjudication of what's grass-fed?
Correct. As of now, again, we have to see what the beef lobbies are doing. But probably equally as disturbing, what did get removed, frankly, as part of the farm bill towards the end of last year, was country of origin labeling.
Oh boy!
So
yeah.
that when you and I went into a supermarket and we wanted to buy some ground beef, the label said, and we got a lot of questions from consumers about this, the label said, you know, product of U.S., Mexico, and Canada. And the questions that we got is, are, you know, where are they just grinding, you know, cows together from all three countries? And the answer is no.
Right.
What happens is it's less expensive to birth the cow here in the U.S., send it to Mexico to be raised, and then up to Canada to be slaughtered and packaged.
Mm.
And when you told that to people, they said, what? How could that be less expensive? Well, that's also one of the reasons that we've got a lot more E. coli outbreaks, a lot more food safety nightmares taking place.
Because the production chain is so complicated.
Exactly. And just transporting these herds back and forth and back and forth. You know, it's relatively simple. We need to eat simpler foods. We need to really have our supply chain be much simpler and really think about what we're eating and where it's coming from.
And there's a big trend towards locally grown now, but that, you know, the Chipotle fiasco has put a little bit of a crimp in that that particular movement.
Exactly, and Chipotle meant well. Let's start off there, and really responding to consumers. But when you're buying things locally versus buying things from, you know, huge big pharma, if you would, or huge big food companies, they don't have the controls in place. And you know, if Chipotle's around the country are all buying from different suppliers with different growing techniques and so on, you have to have a team of people out there inspecting, and Chipotle, frankly, just didn't have that.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a good introduction to the new terrain of supermarket retailing and the food business in the U.S. What we'd like to do in part two is take a look at some of the new trends that you're spotting. You're saying that 2016 is going to be a breakthrough year for the food industry, and we're excited to hear about your predictions of food trends for this year. Our guest is the supermarket guru, none other than Phil Lempert, who's got a great website at supermarketguru.com. You can find lots of information there, and we'll have more information for you in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.